Hey, everybody. It is time for Add This To Your List, a podcast where we help you decide what you should love and what you should not really love. I'm one of your three co-hosts, Mark J. Parker, and I am here with Fumi Samanu from the West Coast and Tom Chuba from the East Coast. What's up, guys?
Hi. Yep,
we got it covered east to west.
Yeah, we're a national.
Now we
baby.
Need north and south.
Oh, maybe we'll expand one day. We'll see. How are you guys doing? How was Labor Day? Hope everyone had a good Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, it was good.
What'd you guys do? Anything fun?
Nope.
Nope?
Just relaxed.
Just chilled?
Yeah.
Yeah? How about you, Tom?
Yeah, I've been getting over the loss of my doggy. Yeah, I've talked about Allie in the past on the podcast. I think back in March-ish, she started having heart issues. She finally succumbed to those, poor baby. So she's at peace now, and it's kind of the first, actually, adult dog. Like, it's the first time in my adult life that I've ever had to lose a pet. And damn, yeah. Y'all, that's, it's tough. It's real tough.
Oh, I believe it.
Yeah,
I know.
That's rough. Yeah.
You're so right, Tom. Because, yeah, I'm sure it's different. Because when I have lost dogs, it was when I was younger.
Yep, exactly.
Which is, of course, tragic, but it's a different kind of tragedy when you're an adult, when this is like your baby.
Yep.
You know? Well, we love you and Allie. We're thinking about her. And I know it's been a hard week because we got hurricanes. We have another mass shooting. I mean, all this terrible stuff that is just ridiculous. But we are here to talk about some lighter things to take your mind off those terrible things. So we'll get into our housekeeping and headlines. And then we have our list for the week. And then later on, you will hear our very own Tom at the Toronto International Film Festival.
Whoa.
Interviewing a very special person who does a really cool and important job in film that we don't really discuss a whole lot. And we definitely haven't discussed it much on this podcast. So stick around and listen for that interview. It's going to be really cool.
That is so exciting.
Okay, but so let's get into housekeeping and headlines. We don't really have much housekeeping, but we have some new headlines. Foom, why don't you go first? Tell us what's on your mind. What's on your radar?
Yeah, so I just wanted to talk about summer's winding down. We're transitioning into fall, new programming across all of cable and broadcast and streaming. But we did have some summer stuff, and I know I, for one, like Claws, even though this was not the best season, and like Yellowstone and a couple
you
other
love-
like...
Yeah, you love Yellowstone.
It's such a good show. So I wanted to break down a little bit of, from according to The Hollywood Reporter, what were summer's winners and losers in TV?
Ooh, what you got?
Tell us.
So winners are the Bachelor franchise. None of us watch that show, but it does get insane ratings. And this last Bachelorette did extremely well, getting upwards of like 7.2 million views.
Wow.
Yellowstone, like, guys, blowing-ish out the water. It was up 13% over season one.
Yeah, it's quite the show. Everybody keeps telling me that I would love it, too.
What is wrong with you, Tom?
You're a cowboy.
Yeah, Tom, I feel like
you would love it.
It's got your name all over it. But wait, people are really watching the Paramount Network, Foom? Wow.
Dude, this show is so good. Like, I officially got rid of cable, like I cut the cord.
Whoa!
I still watch, like, welcome to the club. Yeah, it's not really like I don't feel like I'm missing anything. Like I still get all the channels I would normally watch.
Right. And you probably borrow someone's password for things that you might not get. Yeah.
Exactly.
Totally.
But Paramount is like one of the channels that like I have to watch because I have to watch Yellowstone. It's such a good show.
Wow.
It's such a good show.
So that's doing well, okay.
Big Little Lies, even though the credits didn't love it, people certainly did.
Okay.
And the Women's World Cup.
Ah.
Right?
Cool. All right.
Go Megan.
Beverly Hills 90210, we talked about that on our last episode.
Uh-huh.
That also technically was a win because it had such a blowout
premiere,
first episode, even though the ratings have like dropped. Horrifically.
Wow.
Now, some of the losers.
Okay.
Scripted broadcast shows, like, all across the board.
Oh, yeah. I'm not really surprised.
I didn't watch a single scripted show this summer, to tell you the truth.
Wow.
Scripted broadcast, excuse me.
Broadcast. Oh, yeah. I mean, who would, right? I don't even really know what's out. I know ABC has a couple scripted shows, but, I mean,
and none of them did well. No. Grand Hotel didn't do well.
Okay.
It just does not. The final season of Elementary on CBS did a pretty decent job considering.
Okay. Wow. So they saved that for summer. Ooh, gosh.
Well, they probably were just trying to burn it off.
They were just trying to get rid of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then reality shows. Like, so you got Paradise Hotel, which Fox did that reboot. That did not do well.
What a mess. I saw one episode and I was like, ooh, this is rough.
Love Island on CBS did not do well, even though it was such a hit in the UK. American audiences were just not checking for it.
Mm.
But maybe the CBS is bringing it back, though, so maybe they will for season two. Who knows?
Okay.
That's pretty much it. I mean, I used to watch Preacher. It's actually been on my list, but for some reason, this last season, I'm not into it.
On AMC, right?
Yeah. They started doing this whole thing with, like, God, and, like, it's been carried on for, like, multiple seasons, and it's actually the most horrible storyline. Like, it's so bad. And the fact that it's been carried on for 3 seasons now, it's just like, okay, well.
Do you think that show's on its way out? Do you think it only has maybe a season left? What do you think?
Oh, no, it is. It's the last season.
Oh, this was the last season. Oh, yeah. Okay. Wow. Yeah, I didn't even see any promotion for it. But also, exactly. I kind of gave up on AMC a while ago. I don't really find anything they're doing all that interesting.
I tried watching The Terror season 2. You know, Mark and I were both really big fans of The Terror season 1.
I am curious about that.
And then
that.
It fizzled very late into season 1. I did check out the first episode of season 2. I will say that it's incredibly well made. It's historically very interesting, but it was not scary or spooky at all. So I was just like, I don't got time for this. So
anyway. you gotta thrill me if you want to keep me.
Yep.
Right? Interesting. Okay, so that's all your winners and losers, Fume.
That's my winners and losers, according to the Hollywood Reporter. And you know, this is the season where we're saying goodbye to a lot of shows. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens in 2020.
Totally interesting. That's good. All right. Well, from summer to fall. Now that you know we're not in fall just yet, but of course it's September, which is kind of cray, and it's big film festival time. We know Venice Film Festival is happening as of this recording right now. I know, like, the new Joaquin Phoenix film, The Joker, got an 8-minute standing ovation, which I'm not surprised about. I feel like that's going to be a big movie we're going to be talking about. He apparently is great. Ad Astra apparently is great, right? Which I'm happy for Brad. I know Tom is like, ooh, Brad Pitt is not sexy. Said only Tom Chuba in the whole history of the world, but okay. What else did I read? I read that. What else? I'm trying to
Ford versus Ferrari did. Oh, at Telluride, Ford versus Ferrari did okay.
Oh, yeah, Telluride's happening as well. Yeah.
Some Netflix
Marriage
movies.
Story.
Yep.
Yeah,
Marriage Story. And The Laundromat, they say, is so-so. I mean, it's Soderbergh. He's very divisive as it is.
Oh, totally. Yeah, totally. But I know I heard A Marriage Story and I heard The King, the new Netflix Timothée Chalamet.
Oh, with Chalamet? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, apparently that's very good.
And
He's
The
very
Report.
Good.
Amazon's The Report is supposed to be amazing. So.
Nice. Hopefully, if things go well, I might be seeing an early screening of that. So you might be hearing about The Report.
Do we think
weeks.
That Netflix is going to take Best Picture again?
I don't know. I don't know. It's so hard to tell. What do you think it would be for? Marriage Story?
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
That's the first one that I've heard, like, really amazing.
Or The Irishman, right? Is that what it's called? I don't. I mean, maybe. I mean, they're really coming for it this year.
They are.
So we'll see. Right?
They are.
But, Tom, you got to tell us, since we're in the film festival story, you got to tell us what's going on in your world.
Yeah! Hey, guys. It's Tom here. I am going to continue in last year's tradition and kind of give you a rundown of Toronto International Film Festival 2019 while I'm sitting outside here in a park like Fumi and I did last year. I'm decompressing from it all. What a whirlwind of a 3 days it has been. I have seen 6 films, in the order of which I've seen it: Portrait of a Lady on Fire, Pain and Glory, Blackbird, The Friend, The Lighthouse, Knives Out, and finally, The Obituary of Tunde Johnson. And we actually at the end of the episode, have a brief interview with the director of photographer / cinematographer for that film, so stick around for that. Okay, so what are my thoughts? I'll start with Portrait of a Lady on Fire. That film made waves at Cannes this year. It is a French film. A lot of people expect that it will be France's submission for Best Foreign Film at the Oscars. And if it gets a nomination, guys, it is so well deserved. This has been described as the lesbian Call Me By Your Name, and I think that's probably somewhat of a fair assessment. It is about a woman in France in the 1700s who is hired to paint the portrait of another woman who has been told that she has to marry somebody else. So it's an arranged marriage. So this painter goes there to paint this woman, and they end up falling in love with each other. And despite the trials and tribulations of what it is like to be a woman and a lesbian back in 1700s France, it is absolutely phenomenal. The acting is top-notch. The cinematography is among the most beautiful I've ever seen. I saw the director Céline Chomas speak before the premiere, and she just is gloating over the reaction to this film. It's kind of universally loved. I think it's got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. Again, well deserved. You will hear this name a lot more as the award season continues to go full steam. Pain and Glory, that is Pedro Almodóvar's newest film, starring Antonio Banderas and Penelope Cruz. It is loosely based on Pedro's life. Banderas plays a gay film director who once had his heyday and is now kind of sort of in a decline creatively and physically. He has a lot of ailments going on with his body, and he's trying to get over the loss of his mother, and also he's still reeling from a relationship he had nearly 20, 30 years ago with another man. Banderas is getting rave reviews across the board, again, deservedly so. The film was incredibly moving to me. There is a scene where he runs into his ex-lover, and it's among the best 10 minutes that I've ever seen on film. It comes close to Call Me By Your Name, guys, and you know how I feel about that film, so let that sink in. Next up was Blackbird. This is an indie film with quite the cast, though. It stars Susan Sarandon, Sam Neill, Kate Winslet, Mia Wasikowska, Bex Tyler Klaus, I believe her name is. Again, really, really good film. Susan Sarandon plays a mother, a matriarch, who is terminally ill, and so she invites her family home for the Thanksgiving holiday because she is going to end her life. She wants to do assisted suicide with the help of her husband, who's played by Sam Neill. I believe it's never clear what she has, but I believe it's MS, and it's now it's in its advanced stages. So she really is getting to the point where she doesn't have good quality of life, and she wants to end it before it gets any worse. And so the family kind of comes to terms with that. Really beautiful filmmaking. The acting is good. Susan Sarandon is definitely the standout, although Kate Winslet does some really good work in a role that she really doesn't do quite often. She plays a very uptight wife and mother. Loved it. Cried a lot. Everybody in the theater cried a lot. I hope that this film gets life somewhere. I can see Netflix or maybe even Amazon Prime picking this up for streaming because it is very much a small indie film. Next film I saw was The Friend. This stars Dakota Johnson, Jason Segel, and Casey Affleck. Dakota Johnson and Casey Affleck are a married couple. She has terminal cancer, and Jason Segel plays their best friend, and he decides to move in with them and help them through her final days because they have children. He has a job which requires him to travel, so there's a lot going on. Really emotional film. Unfortunately, Dakota Johnson really isn't the best actress, and I feel like the film would have been that much better if they had picked somebody who could handle that gravitas a little bit better. But Casey Affleck and Jason Segel, particularly Jason Segel, were amazing in their roles. I did enjoy this film. It did feel a little long. It was just about 2 hours, and I feel like they could have trimmed a good 10, 15 minutes out of it. But again, a really good film. I like how it focuses a lot on the relationship between a woman and a guy as far as platonic friendship goes. You don't see that told a lot in film and TV, and this movie does that well, focusing on the relationship, the friendship, really, between Jason Segel's character and Dakota Johnson's. Again, if this gets picked up, I see life on streaming for this more than anything else. So I'm curious to see how that goes and what steam this film generates. Next up was Knives Out. That is the new Rian Johnson movie. If you know the name Rian Johnson, it's because he directed the two past Star Wars films. This is his latest take. It's based on a screenplay that he wrote, and he directed the film. Again, quite the cast. We have Jamie Lee Curtis, Toni Collette, Don Johnson, Chris Evans, Catherine Langford from 13 Reasons Why. Really, really fun. It is a traditional whodunit film, right? It's a mystery. They are all members of a very rich family, very much the 1%. And their father, the father of the family, father and grandfather, gets murdered on the evening of his 85th birthday. And basically Daniel Craig gets brought in as a private eye to help the police do their investigation to see whether or not it was truly a suicide, as it appears to be, or if somebody in the family had reasons to make it a foul play case. A lot of fun, very subversive, throws a lot of mystery tropes on its side. Very political. This film is super, super political in ways that you do not expect, and it's a pleasant surprise. The final shot elicited a huge yes from me. I was here for it. I don't want to spoil anything else. Just know that it's a lot of fun. Chris Evans plays a real big asshole, and this is a new endeavor for him because he spent so much time playing the beloved Captain American. Captain America, that he is not in this film, and he's great. Jamie Lee Curtis is awesome. Toni Collette, every time she opened her mouth, the audience just roared in laughter because she plays a very interesting and funny character. Really had fun with this film. It comes out in November nationwide, and I think it's going to be a big hit. So stay tuned to hear more about Knives Out. Next up was The Lighthouse. This is the buzzy film starring Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe. They play two lighthouse keepers in Maine in the late 1800s who arrive on shore by boat to take care of a lighthouse for 4 weeks. Boat leaves them. They're there alone. They have to tend to the lighthouse, do their traditional upkeep, and then the boat is going to come and get them 4 weeks later for them to swap out their shift with someone else. Well, things start happening when they're there on this island all by themselves. It is crazy. It is shot in black and white. But visually, this film is quite an impressive feat. But I gotta say, aside from that, I didn't love it. It's really long. It's really strange. The acting is good. Both Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson just they go to the brink of insanity really well. The audience was definitely eating up their performances, and that part is definitely well-deserved. It's being touted right now as a horror film. It is from the director of The Witch, which we know is a very divisive film, so it's no surprise that this movie is going to really divide audiences as well. You're either going to love it or hate it. There really is no in-between. I say A for effort, but in general, I'm going to say it's an okay to miss. And then finally, we have The Obituary of Tunde Johnson. That film is incredibly moving. It was one of my favorites here at Toronto this year. It is. It stars Steven Silver. That's a tongue twister. Who you might know from 13 Reasons Why, and it is about a Nigerian American named Tunde Johnson. He is wealthy. He lives in the LA suburbs, and he is gay as well. And he is shot and killed by a police officer one night after being pulled over. And the twist here is that in kind of a la Groundhog's Day and Happy Death Day, he has to live the day of his death over and over again. He's stuck in this loop and he can't get out of it. I don't want to give anything else away other than that. The film is fantastic. The acting is superb. The script is solid. The cinematography is also really good. And we have an interview with Stephen Hollerin, who was the cinematographer for this film, at the end of this episode. So stick around and listen to that, and he'll give some insight on working on this film and other films as well. So that's it for my TIFF wrap-up, guys. In general, I would say that my favorite film was Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Second is Pain and Glory. Third is The Obituary of Tunde Johnson. Fourth is Knives Out. Fifth is Blackbird. Sixth is The Friend. And finally, The Lighthouse at number 7. And that is probably the only film I'm going to say is okay to miss. Everything else I'm going to say is a solid add this tier list. So that's my TIFF wrap-up. It's been a great year. Hope to come back next year. Maybe Mark and Fumi will join us. And let's get back to it.
Awesome, Tom. Thank you for that. That was really great.
Yeah.
I'm glad you and Jeff had a good time.
Yeah, thank you, Toronto.
I'm sorry I missed it this year.
Yeah, me too.
There's
sorry,
always
Tom.
Next year.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Maybe one year we'll have, you know, like MTV had like the spring break house. Maybe we'll have the add this to your list house at TIFF.
Right?
It's got to be purple, though. So if you have a purple house in Toronto, let us know.
Oh, God.
And to wrap up our headlines section, I got some exciting news. Can I just give a quick shout out to just, I feel like this was a good week for like women in TV, especially women of color. We had Missy Elliott killing the VMAs. I don't know if you guys watched. I actually did because I guess I'm still 13. And she rocked the house. Lizzo rocked the house. Missy won her award. Can we also talk about how the Beverly Hills Housewives are now finally welcoming a person of color, the beautiful Garcelle Bouvet? I think that's
okay. I know.
Okay.
I'm so excited. But right? I have to say, as fabulous as Garcelle Bouvet is, I don't know how much like life she's going to bring to the Beverly Hills Housewives because they are dull.
I know.
Dull,
and not that she's dull, but she to me is kind of like Cynthia on Atlanta. Gorgeous,
yes.
Calm.
She's very pretty.
I don't know. Right, I don't know if you're really going to be like flipping tables or like throwing glasses. Maybe, I don't know. But I'm just glad to see a shake up, a much needed shake up on that show. And segue, I know Tom's like, you've lost me, guys. You've lost me.
I'm like,
but
please bring it back. Bring it back because there's some good news here.
I'm reeling our cowboy back in with my lasso because Beverly Hills star herself, Kyle Richards, OMG. The original Lindsay, the little girl from the original Halloween. We've talked about the new Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends sequel on this show last time or a couple weeks ago. Kyle Richards is coming back to the Halloween franchise. I am shitting myself. I am so excited.
Lindsay.
I hope she's got her hair in pigtails again. I think it's great. I think she held on to that friendship with Jamie Lee Curtis with all of her might, and it worked out in her favor. I bet she was just going to be a cameo, but you know what? I think it's great. I remember when the Halloween came out last year, I was like, that'd be so fun if Kyle Richards even just like had a cameo as some flashy like real estate agent in Haddonfield or I don't know, something. So
I think
we'll see.
She may, I think they may surprise us and they may dull her down. And
wow,
to
I
be
don't know
like
if that's possible.
Very different from her Housewives persona.
I mean, if they can somehow get that out of her, I say go for it. But I mean, she's got veneers for days. Everything is tight and worked on. I don't know. We'll see. But either way, I'm living for this. And you know, Foom, we are going to see some amazingly cringeworthy Bravo commercials with Kyle and probably Lisa Rinna and Dorit saying, ooh, Halloween's coming out. You know those terrible commercials are coming our way. And I might be actually more excited.
Do you think she'll
get
any screen time with Michael Myers?
I mean, some fans are like, it could be cool if she's like the Drew Barrymore of this movie and she opens the movie. I don't know if they would give her that. I mean, she hasn't acted in quite some time. But I don't know. We'll see it because also we have the boy, the little boy from the original movie is now an adult. So I don't know how they're going to work them in. I'm thinking it's just a cameo. It's just a quick scene, maybe with Jamie Lee. I don't know. I have a feeling she will not see Michael, but I don't know. She better work on that screen. We'll see. But that was my little exciting tidbit. I'm so excited.
Yay!
Okay. Anyway. Okay. Enough about that. Let's get into our list, shall we?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Okay, Tom, I'm going to start with you because you have a big item on your list that I was also thinking of putting on my list. Can we go with that item first, if you know what I'm hinting at?
I think I do.
Let's do it.
First item on my list is Taylor Swift's new album, Lover. Mm-hmm. We've heard a lot about it over the past few months as she's been dropping singles and doing her whole, you know, pandering. Well, a lot of people say she's pandering to the gay community. I think she's supporting us, and I say, you go, girl.
Yeah.
My husband is a huge, huge fan of Taylor Swift. I kind of take her, I could take her or leave her. Mm-hmm. I like her music. I don't think she's some goddess that a lot of people do. But I've got to say, Lover, it's a big album. It is 18 songs, so it's jam-packed. I like exactly half of the album, and the rest I don't. So I'm going to say it's an add this to your list. Check it out.
Okay.
If somebody like me is liking 9 songs out of 18, and I'm not a huge Taylor Swift fan, I'm sure all the Swifties out there, shout out. I'm sure you guys are fawning over it. So, yeah, no, I like it. It's pretty good. I think it's very different than some of her past albums. The songs that I like, the way I see it is Lover is kind of split into two. You have half, which is like typical traditional pop anthems. And then you have another half where she's like experimenting with just this very different sound. Kind of Lana Del Rey-ish. There's a lot of down-tempo.
A lot of folksy, very folksy, bluesy.
Yep. Mm-hmm. My favorite song on the album is a song called False Gods, where she has some jazz thrown in there. And y'all know I love my New Orleans jazz. So I was like, yes, when I heard the song. Mm-hmm. So I like that side of the album. I like where she's just kind of like taking it down a notch. And I dig those songs. This album is very much about Joe Alwyn. She is in love with him and she is not afraid to shout out about it. And good for you, Taylor.
Oh yeah, I forgot they were together.
Yeah, right, yeah. I mean, yeah. London Boy, Cornelia Street, which is my second favorite song on the album. I love Cornelia Street. So catchy. Those are clearly songs about Joe. The song she did with the Dixie Chicks, I think it's called You'll Get Better. It's a very good song. It's very raw. Taylor's voice on that song is very, very raw and honest because it's about her mom's battle with cancer. However, I'm like, you don't even hear the Dixie Chicks on there. They're playing the instrumentals. So I was just, that was just kind of odd for me. That kind of fell flat from that perspective, that there was this months of buildup. They had done like a photo op together where they were wearing the same t-shirt, Dixie Chicks and Taylor. So everybody was like, oh my God, they're going to collaborate. And they did, but it's just kind of meh. You know, it's a good song, but it's just kind of a letdown when you talk about a collaboration.
I'm curious to know which songs you don't like, because I only like 3 songs on the album, and I bet you the ones that you don't like are the ones I like.
Okay, so let me pull it up. I will tell you.
I like this game.
Let me pull it up 1 second. So, Mark, what did you think of it?
So, as you're finding that, Tom, I have to agree with you. I guess overall, I do like Taylor Swift, but I am not a Swiftie or what. I don't know what you people call yourselves, but I'm not you. I like her, but every now and then she annoys the crap out of me. I know we talked about that song Me on the album. Mm-hmm. I don't really love it. The video was a little crazy, but I do love You Need to Calm Down. I agree with you, Tom. Some songs I'm like, skip, but some I actually really love.
Yep.
And it's the perfect mix of typical Taylor that's kind of, like you said, not pandering, but sort of just like going through the motions. But then there are some that are truly surprising. I really love Miss Americana. I love that
song. Oh, see, I don't like that song.
Oh, really?
I knew it. That's one of the 3 I like too, Mark. That's so funny.
I don't like I Forgot That You Existed.
Wow. I will say, though, that on Miss Americana and the, what is it, and the Perfect Gentleman or something?
And the Heartbreak Prince.
That song is almost close to perfect, except for, like, the childish, like,
go!
I'm like, Taylor, what are you doing?
I know, but I like it, and I kind of actually like that it's about high school, even though I'm like, God, Taylor, you're obsessed with high school. I don't know, something about that song I love. I've listened to it already 10 times. I like The Archer, and I also like the really stripped down It's Nice to Have a Friend. Oh, what a beautiful song.
Oh, I don't
song.
Like that one.
What? Oh, my God, Tom.
And I really don't like I Forgot That You Existed. And number 2, Cruel Summer. I don't like Cruel Summer either.
Oh, okay. Mm. A lot of people like Cruel Summer. What was the other one you liked, Foom?
The Man. That's Americana good. And The Heartbreak Prince and London Boy.
London Boy's a good song, yeah.
London Boy has Idris at the beginning, right? Yes. That's Idris Elba. Yeah, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
It's freaking adorable. That song is so cute.
Yeah, some are very cute and poppy, but then some, wow, I'm surprised, Tom, that you don't like It's Nice to Have a Friend. That song makes me think of, like, Sufjan or something, because there's a little bit of, like, trumpet. Like, I feel like some of it's very poppy and sweet, and then some she's actually growing. So, yeah, overall I liked it, you know. But I'm glad we're talking about it, because it's huge, and Taylor Swift fans, please listen to this podcast. Thanks.
Thanks.
They're going to kill you because you said you're not a Swiftie.
We'll be all right. We'll survive.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right, so second thing on my list is Mindhunter Season 2 on Netflix. Mm. This is an add this to your list as well, guys. It is no surprise. Netflix made us wait a really long time between Season 1 and Season 2, and for good reason, because Season 2 is damn good. It is, to me, in my opinion, it is a very different show than Season 1. Mm. Season 1 focused on their interviews with serial killers who are already caught and in prison, and they focused on one or two in particular, the most memorable being that big 6'9" guy, Ed Kemper. The actor who did him was amazing. I'm just stunned he didn't win an Emmy for it. Mm. Season 2 is different because it focuses on the Atlanta Strangler case from the late 1970s and early 1980s, when a bunch of boys were going missing in Atlanta, and they were showing up strangled and dumped in the woods or in the river. So our FBI gang goes down to Atlanta for most of the season to try and help and solve this case. So that was very different because they were working on an active case versus talking to killers who had already done their deed. You get a little bit of that in this season. They go and they talk to Berkowitz, David Berkowitz, who was the son of Sam Killer from New York City. Mm-hmm. They talk to Bundy, I believe, and they talk to Charles Manson. Fun tidbit, the same guy who plays Charles Manson in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood plays him in Mindhunter.
How
very
crazy,
interesting.
Right?
Yeah. Super crazy. But he looks a lot like him, so I can understand why.
He does a great job, though. He's a really good Charles Manson.
Yeah, totally.
And do you guys remember, a fun fact about that actor, I forget his name, but I remember he was a creep in the House of Wax remake with Paris Hilton. Do you remember that movie?
Oh,
no. I kind of have a soft
movie,
spot.
I don't remember him in it. Wow.
I kind of have a soft spot for that movie, but he is a freaky, weird, like, he's part of the bad guys, like, driving a truck. But anyway, like, he plays creepy very well.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Season 2 is really good. It also takes the focus a little bit off of Holden Ford, who is Jonathan Groff's character. And I would say Season 2, Bill Tench, who is his partner in Season 1 that we saw lots and lots of, he kind of becomes the foreground of Season 2. So I'm wondering if Season 3, I'm sure there will be one because a lot of people are loving Season 2. I'm wondering if Season 3, Wendy Carr, who's the female of the trio, is going to be the focus. Not to say that Groff is supporting in Season 2, because he's not. It's just that I would say he's no longer the lead in Season 2. They've shifted the story
totally
to focus a little bit on Bill and his family.
Yeah.
But it is good. It is still, the music, guys, is spot on. I mean, the music has the power to send chills down your spine.
Oh, wow.
The acting is still top notch. They get everything about that period pitch perfect. I mean, this is a period piece as much as it is a psychological drama, and that aspect of the production is just spot on. I'm here for it. I've got one more episode to go, and I've loved every single one. So, Mindhunter Season 2, add it to your list.
Wow.
Are they supposed to catch the killer of the Atlanta murders in this? I can't tell. Like, what year is it?
81. 81
oh,
is when
they
catch
in 81.
Yep.
Okay. I thought they were still in the 70s.
I think they started in the 70s, but then I think they jumped.
Okay. Mm.
And how many episodes is season
9?
Season
2 is 9. Yep.
Okay, cool. I got to finally get into this show because I know you guys love it and everyone loves it.
Wait,
so.
You haven't even seen season 1 yet?
I tried to, but I kept falling asleep.
Oh, Mark.
Yeah, it was very slow. You have to agree with me that it is extremely slow.
Yeah, season 2 is not. Season 1 was. I will give you season 1 was. Season 2 is not. I promise you.
Okay, I'll give it another go. All right, cool. Awesome. Foom, tell us what's on your list.
Okay, so my list this week is all about the rom-com.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I saw one item and I was like, I figured Foomy would watch that.
And let me guess, is it on Netflix?
Uh-huh.
Let's be shading Falling in Love. Wink, 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 wink. In spelled in INN, like a better.
I was like, is this a typo?
No, bitch, it isn't. So it stars Christina Milian.
Oh, where's she been?
And she's been working. She's been getting pregnant. She's gonna have a baby with a gorgeous French man.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, so she plays a city girl, much like the Hallmark films. And in one day, her life falls apart in the city. She loses her job. She breaks up with her boyfriend who won't commit to her. She gets really drunk, enters this, like, contest to win an inn. And she wakes up the next morning because they determine winners that quickly, and she's won it. And so she travels to New Zealand to
live. She had some free time.
Well, yeah, she lost her job. She ain't got nothing else going on. So she travels to New Zealand and goes to this inn. And when she gets to the inn, she realizes that the picture is not what it looks like. It is like decrepit and like falling apart. So she decides to stay and fix it up with this gorgeous, gorgeous New Zealand man, even though he's technically the actor's Australian. And I don't know his name. He's like a newcomer, but he's very good looking.
Okay.
He's a very good looking man. And so then they fall in love while they fix the inn together. And it's so stinking good. It's such a cute little movie.
Is it as good as A Christmas Prince?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The Christmas Prince, the allure to that was it was very holiday-esque. Okay. You know, it basked in the wonderfulness of the holidays. This is just your good old-fashioned, run-of-the-mill rom-com. The guy's name is Adam Demos. That is the guy who plays Jake Taylor, her love interest.
All right. Is the acting good?
Yeah. No, listen. This is like a good rom-com. The acting is not like superb, but it's not bad either.
But it'll do.
Oh, it does what it needs to do, you know? I basically didn't go to sleep until 3 o'clock in the morning. I was, like, up late at night, and this was a perfect movie to just sit on my couch and, like, watch late at night. It was fantastic.
Oh, God. Okay. Do you think, Foom, that it was meant to be on Hallmark? And Hallmark?
Oh, no, because there's too much sexual tension for this to be a Hallmark movie.
Yep.
You know? It's elevated to risque. It's PG-13 and Hallmark only does.
Wow. Oh, wow. Okay.
Tom, you're so stupid. Anyway, haters gonna hate, but everyone else out there be loving my rom-com picks. Y'all keep hating.
Our rom-com queen.
My next thing on my list is another rom-com and it's called Plus One. And this one I totally happened on by accident. It's on Hulu, and I love it. It's an add it to your list. It is actually so well acted. It's done so well. It stars Maya Kirsten. How do you say her last name?
Kirshner?
No.
Mia Kirshner? No,
Maya Erskine.
Oh.
From Pen 15.
Oh, my God. I love her so much. I didn't know about this.
Yeah, and Jack Quaid, who was Randy Quaid him. And... what's her face? Meg Ryan's son. It is done so well, you guys. So they basically play two best friends who decide to be each other's plus ones for wedding season since all of their friends are getting married. And she just broke up.
Cute.
She just got out of like a really intense relationship and he has been like perpetually looking for the one forever and he can never find them. So they just decide to spend their wedding season of all their friends getting married, just being each other's plus one.
Mm.
And you just see the course of, like, the evolution of their relationship. But it's not done in, like, a cheesy or tacky or corny way at all. Like, they get together, but then they get together and he's an asshole. So then they break up. And I'm not going to tell you how it ends. But it's just, it's actually, there's no, like, laugh out loud. Like, I even hesitate to call it a comedy per se because it's, like, very drama-esque.
Oh.
Okay. And it's filmed a little more dark. And I think it actually premiered at one of the festivals.
Oh, okay.
It premiered at Tribeca Film Festival. Okay. Yeah, it's done really, really well. It has a 90% certified Rotten Tomatoes. It's a really, really good movie.
Nice.
And I totally, totally found it by accident.
How did you find it? What did you watch it on?
It's on Hulu.
Oh, great.
And I was just like, what is this? And I started to watch it, and I was like, oh, because I like her, because of Pen 15. I think she's funny. Oh,
yes. She is so funny. And he's great. He was just in The Boys on Amazon, so he's blowing up.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's just a solid, solid film.
Wow. Okay. That's such a great find, Foom. I love them. Yeah. I can't wait to watch this.
So check out Plus One. It's an ad. Falling in Love. It's also an ad. Haters gonna hate. Y'all keep laughing.
It's so funny because I got an do you guys get those emails from Netflix like, hi, for us it's yes. Hi Mark and Greg, we added something you might like. And it was the image, and I could see it was Christina Milian falling in love, and I literally thought, Netflix, you gotta stop making these Hallmark movies if you want to survive up against Disney Plus, Apple Plus.
People love these movies. What are you talking about? I bet you they get more views on those type of films than they do on like Mindhunter.
Totally. Probably, no, you're probably yeah. right. Because then I stopped myself and I said, "Oh no, wait, Fumi will watch this. Fumi has already watched this. I am already behind." And Fumi's like, "Oh yeah, at it. I'm done. I just finished it."
You are ridiculous, and it's so true. I did.
It's so true, right? Okay, yep. Cool. All right. So rom-com queen likes those movies.
Yeah.
I have two items as well. I got a TV show and a podcast. Ooh. Competition. So guys, the TV show that I knew I would love, because I love Kirsten Dunst so much. Haters may hate.
I'm so curious to hear about this.
I don't care if you don't like her. I think she's great. She's been around for 25 years. Interview with the Vampire came out 25 years ago, and she stole that movie from Cruise and Pitt, okay? And she just got her much-deserved Hollywood Walk of Fame star. She's great in everything. This show, Showtime's On Becoming a God in Central Florida. It's a funky, long title, On Becoming a God in Central Florida. Guys, add it to your list. It is wacky. It's gonzo. She is giving it her all, as she always does, whether it's a rom-com, whether it's an action movie, whether it's a dark, twisted drama like Melancholia, which, if you haven't seen Melancholia, go watch that, because also, her co-star from this show, Alexander Skarsgård, was in Melancholia with her, so it's a little reunion.
Is there a possibility she'll get a Golden Globe nom for comedy TV series?
I've seen the first two episodes. I think as of this recording, three episodes have come out. I think it's Sunday nights on Showtime. I mean, I'd be shocked if she doesn't.
Yeah, The Affair.
Okay, absolutely, Tom, there you go. I'd be shocked if she doesn't get noms, because she, like I said, is giving it her all. She's
good.
In
good for her.
She's in, like, she's like an late 20s, early 30s brand new mom. She's married to Alexander Skarsgård. It's 1992 near Orlando. She's got braces. They're poor, but you know, they have a house, they have a above ground pool, they're kind of like getting by. But her husband, Alexander, plays Travis, and she's Crystal. And Travis has basically been brainwashed by this pseudo cult that's like a scam, where it's called FAM, and they kind of have people, they recruit people to sell their products and recruit other people, and you have to pay for the products. It's almost kind of like an Avon or a, you know, like those makeup kind of places, those
Mary
kind
Kay
of things.
And shit, yeah.
Mary Kay, exactly. But it's even trickier, because he is obsessed. He's listening to the tapes. She finds out some things that he's done and that put their lives in jeopardy. And so she kind of has to take over because, you know, they're making minimum wage. She works at a water park. She has to bring her baby to the water park. And like, you know, they're just getting by with what they can. But they want that American dream of not working for someone else. You work for yourself. You're not, you know, I think Alexander Skarsgård says J-O-B stands for Jester of Boss. So that's like the slogans that are brainwashing these people in Florida to work for FAM, Founders American Merchandise. And guys, it's wacky. I did not know it would be taking these twists and turns. An hour.
Like
45 to 50 minutes. Yeah, okay. It's an hour. And it's interesting. This show was originally developed for AMC, which I think is shocking, because like I was just saying, AMC's kind of snoozy. And also with the star power, like AMC doesn't really have shows with this amount of star power. But then last summer, it was moved to YouTube Premium, which is even weirder to me that these people
That's
would
odd.
Be on a YouTube show.
Yeah.
And then just earlier this summer, Showtime acquired it. So as of June, it still didn't really have a home when it was bouncing around, but it feels like a perfect fit for Showtime because it's a little violent, they curse, you know, it's a little gritty as it would be in Central Florida in the 90s. But she basically, because of some bad circumstances and because she's desperate, what's so interesting is all the characters are so desperate. They're desperate for their dreams to come true. They're desperate to just pay their bills. And so she is a hustler, and she's all done up with these braces and this 90s hair, and it's great music. Beth Ditto, who I love from the from Gossip, the band Gossip, mm-hmm. and she's had her own music. She's in it. A great cast of wacky characters. I really recommend it. It's weird. I don't think it'll be for everyone, but there are bits of it that make me think of, especially in episode 2, of Kirsten's cult favorite movie, Drop Dead Gorgeous. So it's kind of that really like sarcastic, kind of dark humor. But I'm into it. Check it out. On Becoming a God in Central Florida. And yeah, if I had my way, definitely she'd get some nominations. It's produced by George Clooney. So there's star power all over it. So I'm sure we'll be hearing about it later on in the year when it's awards time. Totally. So that's my first item. My second item that you guys should all have on your radar is the podcast Playing on Air. Really interesting podcast. Have you guys ever heard of this?
No, never. No.
Right? I had never heard of it. It's not a new podcast. I think it's been around for maybe a couple years now. But I had recently saw a social ad. I think it was on Facebook, promoting one of their latest plays, Nudity Rider, with Michael C. Hall from Dexter, Hamish Linklater, who I think also wrote this play, and Martha Plimpton, who I love, who's been in a bunch of things, The Goonies, to all sorts of things. But so Playing on Air is a really fun, interesting podcast. If you ever need a break from, you know, just talking heads type stuff, this is like a radio show. It's like a radio play. Each week or each episode, they recruit different actors. Some you definitely recognize: Timothy Chalamet, Rosie Perez, Bobby Cannavale. I just mm-hmm. listened to one of his today. So some you'll definitely recognize. Some you might not. They're more New York theater actors. But they pick a short play. Episodes range from 20 to 40 minutes. And it's just really enjoyable. There's music, sound effects, and so it's a short play. You meet the writer and director and the stars, usually. There's a little Q&A at the end of it. But they range from comedies to very serious dramas. It's just kind of like a little old-fashioned, throwback-y kind of like radio show that I really enjoy. I think it's just a nice change from listening to music or listening to critics like us. So, you know, I think every now and then, if you want to just hear a story, apparently okay. I haven't heard Timothy Chalamet's episode.
Yeah, I'd
yet.
Be
I
most interested in that one.
Yeah, of course. But, his apparently are the most popular. Duh. But yeah, it's on, you know, Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, all that good stuff. So you'll recognize some names. And even if you don't, I say go for it. 'Cause it's just nice to kind of listen to something that you don't really hear at all anymore, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. After you listen to this, then you can listen to that.
Oh, I see what you did
right?
there.
Mm-hmm. There you go. There you go. So that's Playing on Air, a theater podcast. And so that is the end of our list. I think we had all ads, yeah? Six
yeah.
ads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So to recap, we're adding it all up. We had Taylor Swift's Lover, which Tom and I are saying ad. Fumi, you are saying, what do you think? Like,
oh,
sort
you can
of
add
ad?
It. Yeah.
Yeah. She likes some songs. Taylor Swift's Lover, Mindhunter Season 2 on Netflix. Also on Netflix, Falling in Love. Then we have Plus One, which sounds really good, on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
And then Showtime's On Becoming a God in Central Florida and the podcast Playing on Air. Add it up. Check those out. Let us know if you agree that they are ads on your own list.
All right, everyone. I am here with Stephen Hollerin, who is director of photography on The Obituary of Tunde Johnson, which is premiering here at Toronto International Film Festival. Stephen, nice to see you.
Nice to meet you.
All right, so let's dive right into it. What, as a DP, made you have to do this film?
There's a number of reasons why the movie was appealing to me. First reason was there's a number of timely issues that the movie deals with right now, whether it's Black Lives Matter or gay rights, that I thought were really important to talk about in the film and I wanted to be involved in. So that drew me into the movie, and then the second reason I really loved it was the way that the writer Stanley Kalu put the film together narratively. So he structured it in a way where the main character repeats his same day over and over again, which you might be familiar with in the movie Groundhog's Day.
Sure.
Here we're dealing with a totally different issue. But that narrative structure gives you a lot of freedom as a filmmaker and as a cinematographer to explore different visual styles in one particular movie. And that was exciting for me, something that I hadn't done before and something that I wanted to do. I also knew that that would be a challenge as a filmmaker because you have to keep all the loops straight in your head as you're shooting them. And sometimes you're shooting four or five different loops on the same day with similar action. And so you can get very confused.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. Did you have an assistant to keep you straight?
Yeah, we had a number of assistants on the film, you know, script supervisor and camera assistants and all that. And they were very helpful in keeping us straight because you end up with 160 scenes and six loops in a movie. You can get lost.
Yeah, I imagine. So how is shooting a movie like this different from, let's say, Creed 2, which you also worked on?
Well, Creed 2 is a large budget blockbuster, so you have a lot more time. You generally have a lot more resources. So comparing apples to oranges in some ways, the actual craft of making a movie is still the same. The craft of storytelling is the same. But in the case of The Obituary of Tunde Day Johnson, we didn't have a lot of time. We had 15 days to shoot the whole movie.
Wow.
I took the job 8 days before the movie actually started shooting. Usually, I'll have a couple months of lead time, prep time, to prepare a look and style and pick cameras. So this all had to happen really fast. And so that was new to me. This is the fastest movie I've ever put together. Not the fastest movie I've ever shot at. The previous film I did, the Sundance movie, A Boy, Girl, A Dream, was a single take in one day.
Wow.
Which is a whole other type of movie. But I like trying out new things and experimenting. It's how we learn as filmmakers.
Sure.
So that's one of the reasons that this movie would be different from a film like Creed 2.
Which do you prefer, working on the big budget blockbusters or the smaller indie films?
I like to do both.
Okay.
You know, I like to work on blockbuster films for a variety of reasons. I think they're exciting in the moment to film. There's a lot of things that you can do that you can't do on an indie film. You also have the chance to reach a really massive audience, and sometimes you don't know with an indie film whether or not a lot of people are going to see it. It kind of depends on how it does at a festival. So for that reason, I like blockbusters. They're also different types of stories, and I like jumping in and out of different genres and different styles. I like the indie world because you can really get into the heart of intimate filmmaking, and you can get to know the actors really well, and you can craft these small personal stories that have sometimes a very universal appeal. And I find that filmgoers are very excited about indies because they tell fresh stories quite often. And you can deal with, like I was mentioning earlier, important social issues that you might not touch upon in blockbuster. So I like to keep a foot in both worlds.
Absolutely. Staying on the indie track, you know, there's two sides of the conversation with Netflix. It's either hurting, it's going to hurt the indie world, or it's going to help. Which side are you on?
Hurt or help? That's a great question. I think it's a mixed bag.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think that over the last few years, I've seen Netflix give a lot of visibility to indie films.
Yep.
I've seen it give visibility to my first feature, which was called The Land, which came out at Sundance in 2016 and was picked up for distribution, but it was a very small theatrical release, and it wasn't released in any of the areas where people who might be interested in that movie would go see it. And so there's a lot of people that it missed. And it wasn't until 2 years later when Netflix picked it up that suddenly it was available for everyone and people were able to see it. And I noticed a huge increase in people's familiarity with the title. And it was exciting. Netflix gave us a platform to share our small indie. You know, at the same time, there's so much content out now, and there's so much content on Netflix that I could see smaller movies getting lost. They're not recommended to you. They're not on the banner page.
Yep.
You might not see them because it can get so exhausting just trying to figure out what you want to watch.
Yeah, same with Amazon Prime, too.
Yeah, it's like walking down an aisle in the grocery store with 1,000 cereal options. Which one do you pick?
That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
So in The Obituary of Tunde Johnson, we get a little bit of a different take on the issue of police brutality than what we've been seeing a lot in film and TV. Tunde's wealthy. So what do you think this spin adds to the conversation, if anything?
Well, I think that it says that it doesn't matter your socioeconomic background. What matters is the color of your skin. And that's what our writer, Stanley Kalu, was trying to say with the movie. He's talked about it in some of his interviews. And what he's said as a recent Nigerian immigrant is that he got here and suddenly he was the same as every other African-American in the country and treated the same way by the police. And he found this experience to be shocking, so he wrote a script about it. At least that's what I got from him. And I think the movie deals with that racism and that bigotry.
Sure. All right, so let's take things on a little more of a lighthearted side. We've been talking really heavy things. Movies about reliving a day over and over again. Happy Death Day or Groundhog Day? Which do you prefer?
I'm definitely a Groundhog's Day fan. That was one of the seminal movies for me as a kid. I thought the craft of telling the story over and over again allowed you to explore a character's journey and his or her development in a unique way, and Bill Murray's performance in that was spot on.
Yeah, it was.
I think my dad still quotes lines from that movie, like, "Don't drive angry" every time I get in the car. So I'm a Groundhog's Day guy.
All right, fair enough. What's next for you?
Looks like I'll be shooting a movie this fall, psychological thriller, and then a period piece.
Oh, very different.
Next spring, yeah, which would be fun, which would be in the studio world. So doing that and then developing a lot of other projects on the side that, you know, hoping to direct and shoot. So
what period?
The early 90s in Boston.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
We need more of that. I think it's time. We're removed enough from the 90s that...
I do too.
We need to start seeing more of that in TV and film. I know mid-90s, was that out this summer? The Jonah Hill movie?
Yeah.
I know that was critically lauded, but I haven't seen it yet. But it seems like the first of a string of period pieces we might get.
So. Yeah, it's a great question. It's like, when does something become viable for a period piece? How many
right.
years have to pass? And with the 90s, at least the early 90s, we were almost to 30 years.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Makes me feel really old.
The days of sagging pants. And
yeah, I really hope that trend doesn't come back.
So do I.
So finally, on this podcast, we tell listeners what movies or TV shows they should be adding to their own list. What's on your list right now?
I'm really, really fascinated by an HBO show called Succession. I haven't seen writing or acting or storytelling on that level in a while. A TV show has completely sucked me into a story that I wasn't expecting to enjoy, and a very dark, twisted family drama. And it's fascinating study on family dynamics and the human character, and I would put that at the top of the list.
How's Kieran Culkin in that?
Oh, he's fantastically disturbed. He does an amazing job playing that role. I think they all do. Sometimes they're not even talking, they're just emoting on camera, and you get everything you need to from their faces, and I think that's some stellar filmmaking right there.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have, so thank you, and congratulations on being here at TIFF, and I hope we get some great things for this film.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
And there you guys have it. That was episode 72 of Add This to Your List. Hope you guys enjoyed it, and hope you will give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts.
Please.
It's all right. If you don't want to give a review, that's fine. We won't shout you out, but those stars would be very nice. But that is it. We'll see you next time. Thank you so much to Greg, Jay, and Allie for your work supporting this podcast. Thank you guys for listening to this episode. Keep following us on social. Keep listening to us on whatever platform you choose to listen to us on. Thank you, Fumi and Tom, and we'll see you later this month.
See you guys later.
Bye.
Ciao.